Much. I hope you will hear me. I apologize for English. I live 12 years in Berlin. I understand perfectly German, but English simply jumps me quicker in head than German. So I'm sorry, but you can definitely talk to me in German, no problem. And I also thank you for coming to this talk, which is more database-like than Linux-like. It's my first time here on Chemnitz Linux Tag, and I must say I am really excited about the whole environment. It reminds me a lot, you know, Comic-Cons in good way. You know? There is all this magic around, many people, you know, discussing a lot of stuff, and that overall mood is like very family-like and very friendly. So I am definitely looking forward to visit also. Next year and coming years. This topic, migrating to Postgres, is more and more pressing in the scope of digital sovereignty. And now when we see how politicians can change their opinions in 5 minutes and once talk about peace and in the next 10 minutes they start a new war. So it's better to be prepared for situations when suddenly friends will behave not like friends. And in scope of European digital sovereignty, this migration from databases, especially those proprietary databases to Postgres, is becoming quite important. Unexpectedly, I don't like that idea, but it is our new reality in which we are living. I work for a German company called Credative. I think you know us. We were one of the first companies worldwide offering support for open source products like Postgres. Yeah, well, 5 years ago it was quite unique still. In these days, market is full of companies which offer similar services, so we also switched to some complex solutions like exactly these migrations to Postgres or lately virtualization with Proxmox, which is like next hot topic for digital sovereignty. Here are a few words about me. I am from Czechoslovakia, Czechia, next country over those hills, and I live 12 years in Berlin. And all my life was about different databases and Linux and different data ingestion pipelines. And lately, I also work a lot of with AI and machine learning. This is like table content, what I will show you. And let's jump on it. Current situation is that non-European hyperscalers, they control around 70% of European cloud market. And it's actually quite a big issue because, you know, they are like sort of owners of those data in scope of US law. I will explain it on next slides. So these strategic dependencies on those on proprietary software is now a quite big problem for European institutions. Practically every quarter we can read about some critical bug in Windows, or there was lately a critical bug in macOS required update to 26.4 version. And transparency of auditability of data is actually quite big issue because we cannot be sure what is happening with data all the time. And there is also this quite often discussed thing of vendor locking. Of course, we can say, yeah, if I go to Postgres, I am also sort of locked to Postgres community, you know. But migrating from one Postgres to another Postgres on another cloud is easy. Migrating from some Oracle or IBM DB2 somewhere else, yeah, this is a completely different question. So with Postgres, we have much bigger freedom to decide where our data will live. And we have this well-known law like GDPR, and lately European Data Act, which actually clearly states portability requirements, that companies should have exit plan for exiting current providers for whatever reason. And here is that issue, this US Cloud Act actually requires US providers to hand over data they are storing on their servers, no matter where those servers are. So it could be here in Germany, but if that cloud data center is owned by American company, it is subject to American law. And if they are asked by US institution, they must hand over your data. So here is like first help, bringing their your own encryption keys, and it is sort of looking nicely. But in last few days, there was an article that Google will speed up switching to new encryption keys for those quantum computers, because quantum computers are now progressing so rapidly that our encryption keys, which are used on classical PCs, will be breakable in a few minutes on cloud computing. So how long this own encryption keys will help to protect our data, which are in hands of American providers, this is a very good question, because lately the news about about quantum computers disappeared. So it could mean that they progress so rapidly that it is now a really strategic thing. There are also financial aspects, and they are quite pressing. I have heard some people from different companies explaining me very different licensing models for different databases. Lately, we discussed one installation of IBM DB2 on ZOS mainframe, and we ask them how they can export data and what they can calculate there. And it was all about, oh, we cannot increase those buffers because we would have to pay a bigger license, or we cannot use more than two CPUs because it would mean additional payments. We cannot use this cache because it would mean additional, license for just these caches. So it's complete useless, ridiculous thing. Unbelievable what these companies ask you to pay for, And there is also this problem if you have like a bunch of Oracle databases and you migrate half of them to Postgres, Oracle experts will come and will say, okay, now you must pay more for these less databases to cover all those expenses for support and whatever you can imagine. So if you decide to go to Postgres and leave these expensive databases behind, then it's necessary to do it like fully, because otherwise you could be surprised that payments will grow up immediately. Also, those technical aspects are well known, because every database has its proprietary architecture, so we are always depending on some solution. But again, with Postgres, there are many open source extensions and additional tools for Postgres, so there will be always some new extension which can help with your particular issue, because no matter how we look at those big companies like Oracle, they lately focus mainly on improving their financial situation, and not to really satisfy users. Another problem is with legacy databases, like, for example, Sybase, Adaptive Server Enterprise. And for those of you who are young and you work with latest technology and state-of-art solutions, it could sound very strangely, but typical situation here in German companies is like few friends created 10 or 15 years ago some solution, build it over a database which was the best in those days. They use it since those days, are afraid of touch it, and only lately, when that hardware on which it is running and they cannot migrate it anywhere else for whatever reason, that hardware is slightly dying and they now face the situation what to do, because they have really like 10, 15 years old version of database and they must migrate it and be sure that everything will be working. This is actually quite a frequent story we face with customers, and you would be surprised how many companies or institutions actually have similar situation. We had one migration from Informix, and that machine was so weak that even selecting data from it caused like incredible overload. And later, when Postgres everything was migrated to Postgres, and it was not tuned properly yet, people were so happy that it's like 100 times quicker than what they were used to on that Informix. Again, the same situation. We cannot go to different machine. We cannot increase those buffers because we would have to pay for new licensing. Companies decide to migrate data from this proprietary or old databases, they are usually afraid of size. So we usually get questions like, do you have experience with migrating 6 terabytes of data, 10 terabytes of data? Size is usually not the issue, complexity is. As I write there, I personally migrated 150 terabytes of data, and it was simple migration, you know, simple meaning there were no gotchas, data model was very straightforward, mapping of data models was almost one-to-one. It was just about, you know, running enough parallel processes and running them in proper order, so newest data will be available immediately and older data will be added step by step to migrate everything. So size is usually not the issue. Real issue is actually complexity and lost knowledge. So there are situations when we get some questions from companies and we reply and ask from our perspective what is their configuration and whatever, and we very often hear something like, oh, last administrator for this database left us in 2010 and creator of this database is not working here or is even dead, so no one knows. This is typical. Typical situation, and we usually, think what those people do with that database. They pray every day that the database is running, most likely, because those are usually databases which are sometimes very critical for their business, but for whatever reason, it's like, you know, ugly baby sometimes. Not always, but sometimes. This lost knowledge is a big problem, and parts of code and objects in database are usually dead. So only when we start analysis and migrate, do some testing migrations, we really discover what are real issues. Some compatibility problems between databases are usually not that big issue as it might sound, because, you know, theoretically, those other databases allow some really big, large objects or much longer names for tables and columns. But true is that back like 20, 30 years ago, there were some very, very strong limitations. So they had like 8 characters for table names or 30 characters. And even back then, Oracle already had, Postgres already had 63 bytes for those names. So those old applications, they usually have short names. And back then, when people were filling data into these large objects, No one really created something like 10 gigabytes big. It was, you know, different era. It was era of several megabytes of operational memory of in computers. So even this sort of the big differences in capacity of large objects between old databases and Postgres actually not a real issue because they store just few megabytes in these large objects. When it comes to preparing that migration, and the biggest problem is usually that people underestimate preparations. They underestimate starting analysis, planning, and validation, and some sayings like "we will fix it later." You know, it never happens. My daughter works in film post-production, and she says, director always says, "We will fix it in post-production," which means we have to do a lot of crazy magic to make it look nicer, but it's not really possible to fix something which was not created at the beginning in the right way. So here in these database migrations, if something is overlooked with idea that we will fix it later, yeah, well, this is not a good start for a successful migration. There are also differences in tooling because those proprietary databases, they have quite often customized GUIs with specialized functionality. But lately, community of Postgres is catching up quite quickly. So I think we will very soon have similar comfort for Postgres also from open source tools. And let's now talk about migrations itself more. Majority of databases is migrating in offline mode, meaning that source production database can be disconnected from users, from application for hours or days, can be dumped or can be actually migrated using batches. And later, when target Postgres database is properly validated against that source database and application is checked against that new database, everything starts again to be opened to users. In real life, there aren't so many applications which would really require near zero downtime. Majority of application can really be switched off for a few days or at least a few dozens of hours. And this is always the best way how to do it. Of course, even this way of offline migration must be properly prepared and must be tested. It's not about, you know, let's try it and we will see it. This is not a good strategy. But if you would have application which really, really, really requires to be running and available with nearly zero downtime, and there is this change data capture strategy. I think you all heard about it. There are different strategies over time being used. First of them was trigger-based change data capture, which of course created additional load of those source databases, which in case of old databases running on old hardware could be like really, really big issue. Therefore, later, new solution was to query data based on some timestamps, which is sort of nicer, sort of more predictable, that load. But again, we can always catch only those latest changes, which in some cases turn out to be issue in some use cases. And therefore, current solution are these log-based change data capture tools. It is similar like logical replication in Postgres. So in scope of logical replication in Postgres. One Postgres works normally, receives data, updates, deletes, and there is a logical decoder which sends those changes in case of Postgres using Postgres transaction logs directly to another machine. But there are also these solutions like Debezium and other, which actually take decoded operations and send them wherever we want. So similar solutions also exist for other databases to really extract those operations and publish them in the way which can be later translated into, for example, Postgres operations. Those are very special solutions, and majority of companies will never need them, because even though people usually panic when they hear that database must be switched off, analysis quite often shows that it is actually not the issue. So unless this is some very sensitive bank application, or I don't know, trading on stock market or whatever, there is a good chance that everything can be migrated offline without this hierarchy with change data capture. Because it looks nice, it sounds nice, but in reality it brings big complexity, and always question is if that complexity brings, you know, some return of investment, because everything companies are doing should be actually measured by return of investment. And if we invest a lot of time into type of migration which is not necessary, it's not exactly a good spending of money. There are some tools for this change data capture, usually companies, when they run their analysis, they come with some ideas what they would like to use. If not, then we can, of course, recommend, based on their specifics, what they already have in their environment to not increase complexity of their environment also further. There is this famous advice: we will write into both databases. We will migrate it, and since we need some reversibility, we will keep old database running, and new database will be running in parallel, and our application will write into both databases. It sounds nicely, it sounds ingenious, but in reality, it is really difficult to make it work consistently. Problem is, if you have two different databases, they most likely will use two different connection libraries. Okay, it could be hidden behind one connection library, but there will be definitely two different instances of these classes for each database one. And if we will be talking about some complicated updates in that database, then running this atomically over two different databases is almost impossible. So this solution works only for very simple examples and very basic traffic. But if there are very complicated patterns for upgrades, deletes, whatever in that application, this is actually an anti-pattern, because very easily those databases could be out of sync. And in that case, it's more headache than advantages from this solution. Could be that exactly your application would need something like this. Okay, there is a question again: how much it will cost to implement something like this into that application? Because when it comes to reversibility, it could be done also by backporting change data capture, because since that application would run on Postgres, we can actually use this logical replication mechanism. And here comes those options like Debezium, because it will capture those changes, and Debezium has also connectors to those other databases. So backporting change data capture back to source database could be much better and a much more safer solution than this dual writing. Yeah, so very quickly about those preparation, those steps for migration. So I already said that this pre-migration step is practically most important, because everything should be audited, must be defined scope of migration, success metric. This is really important. How success looks like? What does it mean that we succeeded with migration? Must be done as an analysis of schema and in some cases even mapping of those specific columns, because in some cases mapping of data types is different based on what is actually real content of that column. Also testing migrations and testing validations must be done before decision is being made how to proceed. And in this pre-migration step, what is really, really important are those here these business constraints and so-called risk appetite. Because no matter how prepared everything will be, there is always possibility that something will happen. And it happened by one of our clients when they migrated, that during testing everything was nice, second testing everything was perfect, and during production migration they actually discovered that one table was not extracted properly, and problem was that validations which have been used for those testing migrations did not cover everything. So it was not that critical problem, so table was extracted later a different way and validated and updated after that migration. But it shows definitely that those testing migrations must be, at least that last testing migration must be like a real copy of that production migration. If something is changed between last testing migration and production migration, it is like big room for some problems. So improvisation is not a good strategy, and some heroic manual work is definitely not the way to successful migration and successful run of that application on new database. Also, when we talk about validation, it is very good to implement validation during migration itself, because some migrations can take really days, especially in cases when those databases are very old, they are very slow, and selecting data from them is problematic. But still, it could be the only way how to extract data, because in some cases it's even impossible to extract the whole tables into CSV files, not to mention any other data format. We have now in these days very great data formats which could really improve, you know, the whole process. But these proprietary or old databases, they quite often do not allow anything besides CSV format. And even this CSV format is usually very special. So when we are lucky enough that data could be extracted into this proprietary CSV format, it means some conversions. And when everything is prepared, then Postgres is very quick in digesting CSV formats. It's done in minutes or in dozens of minutes. And that extraction of data from those old databases in some very unfortunate cases can really take days. This is the situation which many companies are facing, and it's also one reason why they usually delay decisions about those migrations as much as possible until really, you know, everything is almost dying, and then everyone is in a hurry and it's like, you know, an intensive unit care because the application must stay alive no matter what. But so far, we were able to help in all these cases, and those applications on a new environment on Postgres are running quite successfully. When it comes to post-migration validation, this is one of that metrics which says how success looks like. Because, yeah, okay, we extract some data or we get data files. We import them into Postgres, and now what? We need to validate that actually migration was really successful. So basic row counts are just, you know, first step. If we want to be, you know, like technically fully sure, we would have to really compare like row by row and do the same comparison for all tables, which is almost not possible because it would mean that this validation would be much longer than migration itself. So typical ways how to do some validation which will give some certainty about result is making checksums, hash those values in columns or in some parts of rows, meaning some random sample is selected on one database and the same IDs are found on the second database. And either we can compare directly these samples, or we hash those values or make some summaries, averages, whatever. In some cases, these statistics can be done over the whole table. But again, we had situation when running these stats over table on old database was almost impossible because it meant the database became irresponsible for several hours. Those guys were really surprised because it looked like they never ever tried such heavy aggregations on that poor database. But yeah, what can be done. And in such situations, if there are really strange limitations or on hardware or licensing or whatever, we must do the best what is possible. And the last step, there is this application check, meaning mainly performance testing, some regression tests, and comparing results between old version of application and new version of application. Usually some rewrites in application are necessary because in old days, there was no concept of database agnosticism. In these days, developers try to be so-called database agnostic, which is also sort of, you know, true and false in some cases. But in old days, everything was usually hard-coded, so there are SQL commands which use specific syntax of those old databases, and this must be rewritten. Fortunately, it can be transferred quite nicely, and in these days, it is also possible to ask AI, of course. Although making the whole migration with AI is the worst idea ever, because I talked actually about this problem with guys from Amazon, Web Services from Poland. And they said, it was on one Postgres conference, they said they spent a lot of time trying to create ingenious AI solution with their Amazon AI, which they could offer to clients, like, we have this magic solution and it works out of the box and does everything. And they were really pissed, you know, how else to say it, because they said that crazy AI was unstable in results. So even when they give it very specific prompts and declare all those rules and everything was described properly, those results were unstable. So what they did at the end, they used all those rules and prompts to create Python scripts. Because, you know, it was easier to fix those rules and everything in those scripts and be sure that it will work exactly the same way, no matter how many times we will run it. But that AI, even though this is the same model and they feed still the same prompts and they always start new chat and whatever, results were unstable. And it was like they were using, you know, best AI which they internally had available. So if some company will try to sell you some ingenious AI solutions, we currently see this change in business. Like last year, it was, oh, never ever AI, we will stay AI free forever. And this year, it's like, oh, we have here a solution from AI. We fed it into AI. It was running six hours, and gave us these scripts, and everything works automatically. I use AI coding agents daily, you know? And I use ChatGPT Pro and Gemini Ultra AI subscriptions, those crazy subscriptions. So I had a hard time to not laugh because those guys obviously, you know, read some amazing article from some guy saying that I said, Claude, give me application which will make me billions of dollars, and it created that application just from this prompt, you know. So yeah, we will now see another situations like AI will be offered as ingenious business solutions to save money. Yeah, this is a normal way how people usually process these new things. First fear, then we will go over this happy ever after with AI. Yeah, so there are some comparisons and validation tools which can be used. Depends again what are specifics of your environment. And very quickly about a few databases. Everyone in these days talks about Oracle, so I will not bother you with talking about Oracle. I just want to emphasize that when people say that Oracle and Postgres are almost the same and migration is very easy, it's not true at all. IBM DB2 and Informix are much closer to Postgres than Oracle. Problem is that IBM DB2 and Informix, they actually implement SQL standards and Oracle doesn't. Or implements them too, but implemented them too late. So many applications still actually use those old constructs and old limitations and old syntax. So porting application from older Oracle to Postgres is actually sometimes very painful. No matter how nicely it sounds in marketing materials. But yeah, it is actually necessary because of huge licensing payments. But if you would have IBM DB2 or Informix, you are in much better situation because these databases are much closer to Postgres. And therefore migration from them is much easier. And this IBM DB2 database exists in two different versions, like for PC and for that ZOS mainframe. And Limitations. There are some limitations, but some objects can be implemented using this special extension for Postgres. And here is just to show you a very simple example that programming language in IBM DB2 is almost PLP GSQL, so it can be transferred automatically very nicely. Informix is another example of database which is feeling almost like Postgres when you work with this. It is actually a database which, from my experience, is much better than Oracle, but it was always living, you know, in shadow of Oracle. So in these days, since everyone talks about Oracle, companies usually don't know how difficult it is to migrate from Informix, but I can assure you it's much easier than from Oracle. And again, very simple example. Another story is another group of databases, Sybase Adaptive Server Enterprise and MS SQL Server. And they are actually sort of cousins, because MS SQL Server was created as fork of Sybase Adaptive Server Enterprise. And they utilize this special tabular data stream for communication and this special transact ID, TSQL dialect. Therefore, constructs which they utilize internally are quite different. Not that they look that much different, but they differently behave. So conversions from these two databases are slightly more complicated. There is usually some cooperation with developers necessary, because both these databases, when you have procedure in the database, they can simply yield a data set or several data sets into sort of cache. And then you can read those data sets from your application without explicitly returning that data set with some structure or returning it as a return value from that function. So behavior is slightly different. Therefore, these procedures in both databases require some analysis and reprogramming. Fortunately, even this can be extracted from metadata from both databases, and that way we can even some complicated functions and triggers actually convert with quite interesting success rate. Here is that MS SQL Server. Yeah, and last but not least, our own migrator. It's our child. We created it because there are so many open source projects, so why not create another one? Now, true is that we tested different migration solutions, and I personally really loved PG Loader from Dmitry Fontaine. But unfortunately, it looks like that version of PG Loader I was using, and many other guys around, is not maintained anymore. It was created in Common Lisp language, which is something like dark magic, because even number of white spaces between commands has some meaning in this language. So it's not maintainable anymore. And therefore, after checking different solutions, we decided to create our own solution in Python, which might again seem strangely, because we have these nice new sexy languages like Rust and Go and whatever, but they don't really care about all databases. They keep compatibility with databases which are most in use, and even in their cases, like two or three last versions. So something really old will definitely not work with Go or Rust. Yeah, maybe people over time will write those libraries, but problem is that these newly created open source libraries die very quickly, which I witnessed when I programmed in Go. And therefore, we decided to go for Python and use traditional libraries which are well maintained. It has, of course, module structure, classes, creates its own tables with metadata. And since this is our baby, we try to make it as nice as possible, so it can migrate from 8 different databases into Postgres. Definitely in all cases it can migrate data model and data, meaning tables, converting columns, indexes, constraints, views and triggers. And in case of Informix, IBM DB2, MS SQL Server and Sybase, it can also convert that code of stored procedures. Here also some custom defined adjustments can be defined. That conversion is relatively quite successful. But it also depends on style of developers, what they actually embedded in those data, in those objects, and how many objects are that in those databases. And besides of standard workflow, like I have a source database full of everything and target database empty, and I migrate everything, we now have also mapping workflow. Which is use case, for example, for migrating Jira, Confluence, or some accounting software from installation on Oracle to installation on Postgres. Because these applications, they really tried to be database agnostic, and therefore they can be ported against different databases. And since in past they were usually running on Oracle and now clients want to migrate to Postgres, there is this new mapping workflow, which means I have full installation, a full database on Oracle, and I install exactly the same version of that software on Postgres, and I get the whole data model with everything, but without data, and now comes that funny part with mapping, because you know that old version on Oracle usually had that limitation to 30 characters and new version on Postgres has the limitation to 63 bytes. So that way we must implement some rules and map those tables and columns, but once it is defined and tested and done, this migration works quite nicely. And yeah. This is the last slide. Here are those links to our migrator. Don't hesitate to use it. You will definitely find many issues. Problem is all testing databases which I can find on internet are very nice, very clean, meaning absolutely useless. Because real databases have real issues and we can adjust them, but we cannot invent real issues for testing. And that's everything. I thank you very much. I hope it was interesting for you.